Good morning, Nolthando. May you flag the agenda, please.
What are you trying?
Thank you. Good morning. For you, Mora.
I hope.
What is
that? That's bad. That's true.
No, I can't see the agenda.
Well, let me stop sharing it and share it again.
Okay. Or is it my gadget? Maybe.
No. It's your gadget. We do see the agenda.
Oh, yeah. Now I see. Now you see it. It's taking a long time, I think.
You are in Limpopo.
Yeah, oh, but that's the yeah, we all, maybe I should speak for myself, but I think I'm speaking for many of us in this meeting, that we all recovered from the celebration of the victory of Amapogopo, the Springboks. Let me take this opportunity on behalf of the Select Committee to congratulate the Springboks on their Rugby World Cup victory in France and retaining the Webb Ellis Trophy home. This was after the team defeated New Zealand 12-13 in the finals, making it a hard-fought victory indeed. South Africa also made history by becoming the first country to lead the World Cup trophy 4 times, showing that the team continues to keep the 1995 Madiba Magic spirit alive and strong. It was who Tatu Madiba who once said, I quote, "Sport has the power to change the world. Sport has the power to inspire. It has the power to unite people in a way that little else does," close quote. We saw as a nation for the duration of the World Cup was a country united in its diversity towards one cause. This should be a lesson going forward, that as a country, we should continue to strive towards a common cause, strengthening social cooperation and nation building for a better future. That's envisaged by Dr. Madiba. We should also continue this positive note of education, that we work together, South Africans, to end the scourge of unemployment, poverty, and inequality. I'll say a word of appreciation goes to the South African Rugby Union, the team support staff, the Ministry of Sport, and the Presidency for showing their continued support to the team. We would also like to wish the Proteas well now while go ICC T20 Cricket World Cup in India, as they are also showing positive results at the tournament. Yokpina, honorable members, it's to the matric class of 2023 of this year. We would like to wish you all the very best in your final exams. You have worked throughout the year to get this far. This is now the moment to put your knowledge to practice. We are confident as the committee, as the select committee, that this group will reach even greater height. As the select committee will continue with our oversight work of ensuring the smooth running of the exams and monitor any development thereof. Nultando, I want to check, do we have apologies for the meeting?
Good morning, Chair, honorable members. Good morning to the DM and everyone present in the meeting. Yes, Chair, I've got two apologies. One apology from the Minister. She won't be able to join us today because she's in Zambia on official business. And the other apology I have is from Honorable Lehihi. She won't be able to join us today due to the fact that she's got a doctor's appointment. Thank you, Chair.
Yep. We've had this agenda for quite some days. With those opening words, I'll say give the DM to open our meeting. We're looking at the Inter-General's report and the report of the Department of Basic Education. I'll give over to you, DM, to open the meeting and lead us with the presentation.
Sorry, Chair, adoption of the agenda.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Any move of adoption of the agenda? Sorry.
Christian,
Christian support. All right, thanks a lot. Now that the agenda is adopted, we can continue with the meeting. DM.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to you. Greetings to the honorable members. And greetings to the officials of the NCOP and officials of the Department of Basic Education led by the DG. Chair, let me just start by briefing the meeting that exams have started on Monday. Almost all the learners were writing English, paper one, and we did not receive any serious irregularities. We only were told that in the Northwest, there were some protests which did not disturb the running of the examination, but there were just community protests demanding things of service delivery, but our schools were not affected. And also in the province of KwaZulu-Natal, there were storms last week. We also, on television, schools were blown out, and there were about 8 schools in the area of Mkhanyakude district which were blown out by the storms. The 4 secondary schools, the province was able to provide mobile classrooms. Exam is running smoothly. We did check also as to if everything is fine. We found that no, everything is fine. That's what I wanted to brief the members about. Though, of course, in a few incidences, like find that a learner is pregnant, but it's not the school that is denying the learner an opportunity to write. It's the parents who say, no, she decided to be an adult, let her stay home. Even if the school insisted and tried to persuade the parents to say, allow the child. So even if we say we're aiming at 100% of that 100% will not be achieved because of those few incidences. and some learners, because of a stress level, they will be admitted to hospitals to receive such incidences. But we are making plans that they are not disadvantaged. So this is what's happening. But generally, the exam is running very well. That's what we can say as we came to report to you that we are ready in terms of the preparation of the learners, in terms of catching up on the work that they lost when they were doing grade 9 and grade 10. And they were affected. This class was affected in these two key grades, the exit grade of the senior phase and the entry grade of the FET band. So our teachers were hard at work. They were working overtime. That is not paid for, of course, but the teachers is the teacher. That's what they believe in, that they are teachers for 7 days a week and 24 hours a day. That's why they help our learners even weekends, winter classes, autumn classes, all what they said they will do, they did. And we believe that the learners are ready. And even in terms of the securing of the examination, the systems also are ready. Yes, we cannot say 100% because when we deal with a human factor, that factor will always prevail. But we have tried to tighten all the screws. Chair, we are happy that you invited us today here to present. I can't say anything about Mapogopogo. You said it's a mouthful. We want to thank South Africans that they were strong enough from heart attack, especially on the last take.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And it brought unity to the country. It's a unity that we want to see and joy. And it brought our dignity as a nation. We never appreciated ourselves as South Africans, but this time we're together as one nation. The whole world saw that South Africa is a great nation. And indeed, we are a great nation. We've shown the world that we are a great nation. So today we're here for the presentation of the annual report. Yes. Chair, we have 5 programs in the Department of Basic Education. We are here to report on the 5 programs that we presented, the APP that you know, that you have, that how did we fare to making sure that we implement what we said we'll do. So I don't know, because the agenda starts with the report of the Auditor General, so I cannot move to allowing the DG, but the DG is here and all senior managers, the DDGs are here in this meeting and chief directors are here, the whole contingent of education, basic education, except the minister whose apology has been presented to this meeting. And I believe it's accepted because it's not her making that she's not in the meeting today, but the deputy minister is here. Thank you, Chair. I'm not going to call the DG. I will allow you to guide us because there's a first item of the Auditor General on the agenda. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, no, thank you. As you can see, my vision is black. My camera is black, so that's why it switched off. But I must say that we owe the victory of Mapogopogo to the Department of Basic Education, because all those players started playing, majority of them started playing rugby at school level. And if we invest more into school sport, we may even go, you know, very far, like opening rugby academies in the world. Anyway, any nation that loves rugby would like to send their sports people to a rugby school somewhere where there is only one country in the world where they've lifted the trophy 4 times. So congratulations to the Department of Basic Education also, who contributed towards this victory. I'll say with the agenda, we'll start with what is the first one on the, I think we ended up changing them, the sequence. let's go back to the.
EXA.
Yeah. EXA can give their presentation. It's okay. And then the department will follow. The EXA report.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. Good morning to you, together with the Honorable Members. Good morning to the Deputy Minister of Basic Education, the DG, and all the colleagues from the department. Just a word of introduction. I am Khaboko Mapi. I'm the Business Executive in the Auditor General, responsible for the education sector. I am with Mr. Joshua Baganti, Honorable Chair, the Senior Manager responsible for the education sector, the basic education sector. Maybe as a start, let me thank you for the opportunity you are affording the Auditor General to brief the committee on the work that we've done for the basic education across the non-provinces. So our presentation, Chair, will start with the basic education as a department together with the two entities, Umalusi, as well as SAFE. But we also like to take an opportunity just to share the audit outcome of the non-provinces, the Department of Basic Education across the provinces, and the work that we've done on the sector, some of the programs that we selected and we had performed an audit on. So our presentation will probably be in two segments. The first segment will really just speak to the department and the audit outcome accordingly, and the latter part of the presentation will just touch on the work that we've done in the provinces. Chair, I think without really delaying the presentation, I'm going to ask that Joshua just put the presentation on the screen, if you may, Joshua. Chair, just a reminder again, the AGSA is a Chapter 9 institution. We had done the work on three areas in each of the entities of government. We've done work on the financial statements to which we express an audit opinion. That will be in terms of how the finances were utilized. But we also did work on the performance report that was shared with us together with the annual performance plan. And to that extent, we're able to share at least the key findings or the key observations from the programs that we selected. And lastly, we also tested the compliance with the key legislation, again, across the sector. So our audit reports will be in three sections, typically across all spheres of government. So we'll share the audit opinion so far as financial statements are concerned. Chair, as part of the work that we do, we also, I think this was the first year that we're rolling out our strategy, the culture shift strategy of the Auditor General led by Sakane Maluleke. And in there, we are really attempting to ensure that when we audit government, we really start to audit government as a network. But you remember that for basic education, as a start, we've always done a sector work over a period of time. I think from 2013, 2014, we had a sector report, particularly for basic education. So for basic education as well as health, together with human settlement, we are a bit ahead of where the strategy would have wanted us. And I do know that the sector always supported our audit teams across all non-provinces, and we appreciate that. From the department, DBE, as an entity and auditee, you also just remember that picking it up from 2020, when they had a qualified audit opinion, the biggest two items that we were concerned about mainly that was costing the qualified audit opinion would have been the management of the infrastructure, as well as how they were dealing with the completeness of irregular expenditure. And irregular expenditure was mainly in two. So it would be whether the numbers that are being prepared in the financial statement indeed represent a complete picture of the non-compliance that has taken place. But importantly, we are also emphasizing the importance of just preventing the occurrence of irregular expenditure, as PFMA really have a zero tolerance for irregular, unauthorized, and fruitless and wasteful. They'll fast forward to 2021 in particular. I think that was the first year that DBE would have came out of a qualified audit opinion. And we were quite encouraged because that is the first year that they dealt with the issues of infrastructure, and therefore allowing us to be able to give an opinion that does not cast aspersions on the numbers that they presented in the annual report. And the completeness of the irregular expenditure were also dealt with. Of course, we're still concerned about just the non-compliance. We also still concerned about the quality of the financial statements that come through, just so that we don't continue to rely on the audit process to actually identify and correct the errors. So that's part of the contents of the presentation. But the slide that is sitting on the screen right now, Chair, it is what we call the government accountability ecosystem. And on this particular slide, we are highlighting the importance of every role player to really do their part. So as government and as a sector, as basic education, we are going to be as strong as our weakest link in this ecosystem, which would mean that we need the officials to do their part. We need the governance structures to do their part. And we also need the officials to really take in the recommendations of internal audit and audit committee and implement them timely such that they are able to leverage on those insights as well. And again, the oversight that the executive is playing remain quite crucial. And you see in the matter that when we talk about the Auditor General, we say our endeavor is to continue to provide the insights to committees such as your one chair, just so that when you exercise oversight, you are privy to what we would have found when we've done this audit. And again, just influencing the right posture and influencing the right control mechanism. The enforcement leg, it is the introduction of the amendment of PAA, the Public Audit Act, where the AG was given the powers, at least, to be able to deal with some of the matters where we believe the accounting officer are not necessarily hearing us. We did have some of the material irregularities, but I think what is encouraging for this particular sector is that to the extent that we are highlighting this material irregularity in the main, many of the accounting officers were hearing us. Of course, we are hoping for an era where we don't have material irregularity at all, but at least as a JNE chair, we have been moving. This is what the slide is asking in particular. I'm going to hand over to Joshua to really just take us through the nitty-gritty. We will be in your hands, Chair, in terms of the timing, but we'll try to take it as fast as we can to cover everything that we had hoped to at least share with the committee. Thank you, Chair, through you.
Thank you very much, Thabo, and good morning, Chair and honorable members. I'll start off with our mission, just to reemphasize and reiterate our mission. As the Auditor General of South Africa, we have a constitutional mandate. As a Supreme Audit Institution, we exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. And our vision is to be recognized by all our stakeholders as relevant Supreme Audit Institution that enhances public accountability. In terms of our accountability ecosystem, Cabo has already indicated that everyone has got a role to play to bring about a shift in the public sector culture, a culture that's associated with better performance, accountability, transparency, and integrity. And in line with our new strategy this year, in terms of messaging our insights and the work that we've done, we've decided to message or report on the key insights that we've identified in our general report on a theme basis. And to that end, the department, the education sector, together with the higher education and skills and labor sector, we've got a theme called education, skills and employment. And essentially this theme was conceptualized based on the unemployment problem in the country. And in our view, we believe that government has invested so much in trying to eradicate unemployment, poverty, and inequalities. And studies have shown over time that the more someone is educated, the better our opportunities of the person being employable, the better of that particular individual participating meaningfully in the economy of the country and improving their livelihood. And to that end, that we packaged our messaging on education together with skills development and employment as education, skills and employment, so that we see a difference in the livelihood of the citizens, having obtained basic education, having participated in the higher education or skills development space, as well as entrepreneurship and employability. And that was the concept of this particular theme. And having conceptualized and understood the problem statement, we then moved on to identify the key stakeholders in the value chain or in the ecosystem within the employment, education, skills development, and employment space. And I'll focus more on the basic education skills level, where we identify the key areas that we need to unlock to bring about better provisioning of education. And for the current year, we looked and focused more on the provisioning of early childhood development, the National Nutrition Program, scholar transport, infrastructure, the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative, as well as the school performance improvement. And the themes or the focus areas that we picked up is going to be looked at over a period of time. We're not just going to specifically focus on this, but over every year, we'll be looking at various themes that enable and allow the provisioning of proper education as well as skills development. And this particular slide here is just showing the interlinkages from basic education to higher education and to the employment space. And for us to be able, within the education sector, we also identify the key role players that we'll be interacting with throughout when we do and the work that we do or sharing the insights, so that we bring about the implementation or the performance, better performance within the public sector, accountability, and the oversight thereof. And to that end, the key role players that we've focused on, we looked at the provincial education headquarter. We looked at HEDCOM, but we're also looking at the minister or council of education ministers, as well as portfolio and select committees on basic education, as well as the National Education Collaboration Network. And our future focus while we're driving this theme for the next 2 to 3 years, in the next year, we intend to look at the quality, the provisioning of quality education, where we will assess how decisions for school curriculum choice and implementation affect preschool skills, demand and needs. But at the same time, we also intend to look at the Sustainable Development Goal 4.5, where we assess the progress towards attainment of the Sustainable Development Goal in advocating for the provisioning of equal and equitable quality education for children with disability by the year 2030. And then in the 2024-25, we will focus on curriculum coverage as our key area. And I would say I'll then move over to the audit outcomes for the basic education portfolio. Here, we're looking at the audit outcomes for both UMALUSI, the Department of Basic Education, and as well as SAIDS. And we're comparing 2 years, but as well as the audit outcomes since the first year of administration. And for the current year, the DBE, UMALUSI, and SAIDS were unqualified, but they were unqualified with finding, therefore depicting a yellow color coding here. And when we say it's unqualified with finding, we mean that on the financial statement, you don't have a qualification, the financial statement is fine, but you have findings either on the performance information or findings on the compliance with laws and regulations. And for DBE, they were unqualified on financial statements, but they were findings on the performance information and compliance with laws and legislation. Similarly, UMALUSI were unqualified, but they had findings on compliance with legislation. And their main compliance with legislation primarily came about as when we were auditing, we found material misstatements in the financial statements, which they subsequently corrected. And therefore, because they've subsequently corrected the financial statements, then Section 55 of the PFMA kicks in to say that they were not able to comply with that particular section because the financial statements that were submitted to the auditors had material findings. Similarly, SAIS as well, they weren't qualified, but they had material misstatements due to correction on the financial statements, similar to Malusi. But with SAIS, they also had findings, material findings on performance information. And therefore, findings on performance information primarily related to targets that were being reported in annual performance report were not fully supported by evidence to support the numbers and figures that were being reported in the annual performance report. Chair, with the department, I must also indicate that the department, like Cabo indicated in the opening remarks, that there's been a genesis in terms of improvement in the audit outcomes. And it's safe to say that for us, the department has been able to implement most of our recommendations dealing with non-compliance with supply chain prescripts that had caused in the previous years an increment in irregular expenditure. But safe to say as well that there was incurrence of non-compliance in the current year, but if you compare it to the previous year, it's not, the number of instances have significantly reduced. And mainly the incurrence thereof related to the new implementing agents that the department has brought on board in terms of assisting in the implementation of the infrastructure projects. And what we urge the department to do is to improve on the onboarding and orientation processes when the new implementing agents are brought on board to assist the department so that they reduce the non-compliance thereof with regards to legislation, laws and regulations. The department has responded to most of the matters that were reported on irregular expenditure, and they investigated majority of them. And what we also allow indicating to the department is to improve in terms of instituting the consequence management or attending to the recommendations that come out of those investigations. We're also reflecting on the financial health of the department, that it's a little bit concerning in terms of revenue expenditure and asset and liability management. And with revenue management, we highlighting that the department needs to improve on the average debt collection period, which equals to 721 days, to also avoid incurrence of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and as well as to deal with to get proper approval when they have to transfer money to the National Revenue Fund and not to incur fruitless and wasteful expenditure as it was in the case in the current year. The key non-compliance issues that we picked up for the department, the first one pertained to procurement and contract management, and mainly it was due to awards that were not made to the highest scoring bidder, and awards that were made to suppliers who did not submit local content certificates. There was also a non-compliance on effecting consequence management, where we did not find sufficient appropriate evidence that different states were taken against officials who had incurred irregular expenditure. The other non-compliance pertained to prevention of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. That was mainly because there was irregular and wasteful expenditure that was not prevented. So therefore, that non-compliance kicks in automatically. Then I've already touched on material misstatements in the financial statements, much as the entities were not qualified, but for the fact that there were material corrections on the figures that were presented or that were subsequently corrected, then the non-compliance kicks in terms of PFMA. And our recommendations that are indicated is that for the department to swiftly institute consequence management against officials responsible for the non-compliance and help the department recover the losses on time from those officials who transgressed. Chairperson, I would also like to take you through the PFMA compliance and reporting framework. Here, we're basically highlighting the changes that came in at the beginning of the year, specifically in January 3rd, where there was a change in how irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure is reported in the financial statements. And the significant changes were pertain to three areas where the practice note in terms of the compliance framework and reporting thereof, that there would be a movement in the disclosure note of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So previously, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the opening balances on those items were reported in the financial statements. But now the movements have been moved from the annual financial statements to the annual report. And therefore the PFMA institutions will from January onwards, we only disclose irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred in the current year with 1 year comparative. So only fruitless and wasteful expenditure or irregular expenditure that has been incurred in the current year is the one that's disclosed on the face of the financial statements. And then the rest of it is disclosed in the annual report. The historical balances or the opening balances have been completely removed from the annual financial statements. So our message to the select committee is that the fact that the disclosure of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, that's the opening balances and the movements, is no longer required on the annual financial statements, and no audit assurance is provided thereon. Therefore, oversight structures will need to engage directly with the information disclosed in the annual report to exercise the oversight responsibility. At the AJSA, ourselves, we've refined the audit approach to uphold transparency by continuing to audit the irregular and fruitless and wasteful disclosure in the annual report. There is a clear messaging in the audit report on the reliability of the irregular and fruitless and wasteful disclosure in the annual report. And the objective was to ensure that we could still be in a position to report to the users of the annual financial statements in cases where there were historical balances of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was not complete and accurate. This has no impact on the audit opinion. Chair, the next slide is just a depiction and a reflection on irregular expenditure over the past number of years. And if you look from 2018 to 2020 to 2023, the quantum of irregular expenditure has reduced significantly. And in the previous years, like I've indicated, we used to qualify the department on irregular expenditure due to completeness thereof. But the department has put in processes in terms of reporting on irregular expenditure and prevention thereof, although there was incurrence there in the current year. And the total quantum of irregular expenditure was 954 million, but 786 million related to non-compliance that was already picked up in the previous year. So it relates to expenditure incurred on multi-year contracts. So the only incurrence of irregular expenditure for the current year was 103 million. And of the 954 million, 889 pertains to non-compliance with supply chain prescripts, and the 65 million pertain to unspent condition grants utilized without approval, therefore leading to non-compliance with the PFMA. When it comes to performance planning or performance information, we're just reflecting on the top left corner, the information that was submitted before we audited versus the information that we audited and signed off. So before the audit, the information that was submitted by the three entities, we did not find findings on Umalusi, but we found findings on DBE and SAFE, but most of them were subsequently corrected, apart from one on DBE indicator 4.2 and 4.3, which we indicated that was indicator was not well defined, and for SAFE, where we say that reported achievement was not supported by credible supporting evidence. And on the top left corner, we're just comparing the budget spend versus target non-achievement thereof. And we could see that the budget was, most of the budget was nearly spent, and 90% of the targets were achieved for DBE, normally 100% targets achieved and budget spent, and this is also 100% budget and 90% achieved. This is good performance, but we're also indicating that we need to have a proper correlation or translation of budget spent to achievements of targets. I will indicate on this slide where the key targets that were not achieved. In point one, here we're looking at performance against the targets that were set. We're mostly looking at MTSF targets that were included in the planning documents. That's bullet point one for the programs that we audited, 2, 3, and 4. And then bullet point two, key service delivery targets not included in the plans of the department. And then point three, we're highlighting achievements or non-achievements of targets that have been reported in the annual reports of the entities. And for DBEs, mainly two targets that were not achieved, and for SAIS, the three targets. And our messaging here, we're indicating that underachievement of planned service delivery and reported achievements will compromise achievement of government priorities and erode future budgets meant for service delivery, and the exclusion of MTSF targets that might not be, MTSF targets might not be met and could potentially have a direct impact on the delivery of quality education to the citizens. Now, Chair, then I'll move over to material irregularities that we also look at in terms of our expanded mandate. And the concept of material irregularity in terms of the Public Audit Act, it says that if an accounting officer or authority does not appropriately deal with material irregularities, then the Act gives us three options. It allows us to refer the material irregularities to a relevant public body for further investigation, or secondly, to recommend actions to resolve material irregularities in the audit report, or take binding remedial action for failure to implement recommendations. And lastly, the other option it gives us is to issue a certificate of debt for failure to implement remedial action if a financial loss was involved. For the year under review, the department, DBE, had 4 material irregularities in process, and of the 4, one of the material irregularities was resolved, because the department was able to recover the financial losses and was able to put effective internal controls in process. The other 3 material irregularities that are still underway, the department has done the consequence management. Consequence management has been instituted. Investigations have been conducted. Effective internal controls have been implemented. But what's left for most of the 3 of them is to recover the financial loss, and we'll be able to follow up in the coming year whether the financial loss has been recovered. And once that financial loss is recovered, then those material irregularities will be resolved as well. But we also like to have a picture of the material irregularities for the entire sector, and excluding the 3 that I've talked to. Currently, the 19 active MIs at 8 ODTs, and we've assessed that in 7 of those material irregularities, appropriate actions have been or are being taken. And those relate to 3 cases where payments for goods and services were not received, and that's in the Eastern Cape. Then 2 cases where ODTs made payments of interest and other penalties in KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo, and then 1 case where salaries were made to persons no longer employed by the department, and then another case when there was non-compliance supply chain prescripts. At the time we signed off, there were still 8 material irregularity notifications that had been issued out, and 6 of those cases We're still waiting for the responses from the accounting officers. There was one response from that was due from Northwest, one from the Eastern Cape, and four from Mpumalanga. And then the other two cases, we're still assessing the responses to the material irregularity notification that we had issued. And the reason why we're still waiting and why we still is because the legislation allows the accounting officer 20 days to respond to the material irregularity notification. So that's why we were still waiting for the responses from those accounting officers. And then material irregularities that had been resolved, there were eight cases, and it related to payments for goods or services not received, one in the Eastern Cape, one in the Free State, six in the Eastern Cape, and one in the Northwest. But then there was also four material irregularities within the sector where further action was or is still required. And when we say further action is required, it's those instances where remedial action needs to be taken or the material irregularities need to be referred to one of the public bodies. So within the sector, there were four instances of that. Three were in the Free State and one in the Eastern Cape. As part of our audit, we also evaluated the ICT environment or projects for DBE as well as the sector. I will then go through the work that we did. And our work was conducted at the department focusing on the project review, utilization of the education facility management system, as well as the cyber security. And our observations on cyber security, we identified that there were some ICT security vulnerabilities that were detected. And on the education facility management system, we observed that the system had been taken over by DBE in 2021, and with the intention to be rolled out to all the provincial education departments. And our audit also indicated that it had only been rolled out to three PEDs. In terms of the project review on the implementation of the SASAMS modernization project, we observed that 100 million were budgeted for the entire project. However, it had been reduced to 68 million and only a 12 million budget remaining to implement releases 4 and 5, which might hinder the successful implementation of the project. We also observed that system quality management plan and testing were not performed for all the completed releases. And looking at all these observations, our recommendation to the accounting officers to expedite the process of rolling out the education facility management system to all the provinces and holding provinces accountable, implement processes to hold state accountable for non-delivery, and explore options for additional funding to cover the outstanding amount needed for the implementation of release 4 and 5. Then we did similar work across the provinces in terms of project reviews, looking at the SA systems and EFMS and cybersecurity. So basically the findings are similar. The only thing that we did for the 9 provinces that was not done at the department is the ICT projects for schools or the e-learning project. And that's the one that I will highlight on this particular slide, where we noted that for the e-learning projects, the provinces had embarked on the e-learning journey with the initial phase of procuring ICT devices such as classroom tablets and laptops for educators. However, we noted the following, that there was poor network connectivity affecting learners and teachers, smart devices that were corrupted, some were lost or stolen, or not replaced or fixed. School devices not in line with required specifications, and some provinces had not started implementing the e-learning projects. And our recommendation is to implementing processes and procedures to ensure continuous data quality prior to reporting and holding provinces accountable. And also, similar to what we recommended to the department, was to implement processes to hold CETA accountable for non-deliverable and expedite the process of rolling out the EFMS system and explore options for additional funding for the projects. And the overall here on the next slide, Naibu Chair, is just to our reflection on the root causes and recommendations. And the main key root causes was that OT is not implementing effective preventive controls over preparation of financial statements and annual performance reports. But we also highlighting the other root cause of action plans not being effective or not always effective to address the root causes of the deficiencies in the internal control environment, as the repeat findings, and lastly, the consequence management not being instituted timely. And our key recommendations is for the department to strengthen the in-year monitoring and corrective actions put in place to enable for credible financial and performance reporting, as well as to take prudent and effective steps to allow for efficient spending of the budget and proper cash flow. We're also recommending that more effort is still required to deal with irregular and wasteful expenditure and instances of such possible expenditure for ensuring accountability. The OTs should also develop and strengthen the internal controls that will prevent the recurrences of non-compliance with legislation, and that always has a severe impact to the audit outcome. That's the status of the audit outcome for the department as well as SAIS and UMALUSI. Now I'll go into the education sector, highlighting the audit outcomes for the nine education departments. As well as after that, I'll reflect on the key focus areas that we looked at the sector. If you look at the audit outcome for 2022-2023, there is an improvement in terms of the overall audit outcome, in terms of one department improved where they did not have unqualified opinion and there were no findings on compliance and performance information. And majority of the sector, or most of the departments within the sector, had unqualified findings with unqualified opinion with findings, and those amounted to five, and then three departments were qualified. And those three departments, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Northwest. And the main reason for the qualification of these three departments was not accounting for infrastructure properly, where we found errors in the infrastructure amounts reporting the financial statements regarding infrastructure assets were misstated. And this was mainly due to inadequate project management and coordination with the implementing agents. So there needs to be proper coordination and proper management so that they receive credible information from the implementing agents and they're able to credibly report on the infrastructure assets within their books. We also noted that non-compliance across most of the non-compliance with legislation remains high within the sector, and mainly it's due to non-compliance with supply chain prescripts. And this is an area which also might lead to high fraud risk. And because of that, this has also resulted, if we look at the sector as a whole, resulted in an increment of irregular expenditure of 5.1 billion for the current year compared to the previous year. When it comes to performance planning and reporting, the sector, only four departments did not have material findings for performance information, similar to the previous year, but the rest of the departments had findings on performance information. Then looking at the irregular expenditure over the 3 years, like I indicated on the previous slide, the amount has increased significantly, and mainly is due to non-compliance supply chain prescripts. And Because of that, we're just highlighting the key contributors on the one below. We had 1.96 for Limpopo, 1.52 for KZN, 0.5 for Gauteng. Then looking at the financial health as well for the sector, where we're looking at the key indicators for the in terms of financial health, we noted that there is incurrence of unauthorized expenditure, increment in fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and departments are incurring deficits on the budget. And therefore, that's indicative of weak financial management and budget controls, which gives a deteriorating financial health status for the department. And this will negatively affect the ability of the departments to deliver on the services, as some of the departments continually spend money that they don't have. As indicated on the table below, 20% of the department had a combined deficit of 726 million.
May you think about summarizing? You've got less than 5 minutes to do that. You're running out of time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Let me try to summarize with what we left. I think here, the next slide is just a reflection of us in terms of attainment of the MTSF target for the sector, and looking at we sitting at YAFO, but some of the MTSF targets are a little bit behind. So that's the messaging that we're trying to highlight on this particular slide. And the next slide is MTSF target.
I think maybe let me just interject a bit. I think Honorable Chair is indicating 5 minutes. So I guess we may just wind it down. Chair, I think we shared the pack of the slides for the honorable members maybe to later on also just appreciate. But maybe it will be important just to highlight that within this pack, we've done work on nutrition, we've done work on scholar transport, we've done work on the school assessment and performance as well and infrastructure. We may not have time to go through each of those, but it will be important to note that we've given the recommendations to the sector in terms of how we can move forward to make sure that we remedy the instances of the deficiencies identified. So, Josh, maybe just go to the last slide on the recommendations that we shared, and then we'll take from that. Just beam it for me.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So I think, Chair, we would leave it like that. Chair, Josh, yeah. Last slide, Joshua, recommendations before this, the recommendations to the sector. Yeah, I think, Chair, this will be the recommendations that we shared. We'll leave it here, but I think the committee will be able to see what we left with each of the department and the sector as a message for the year and where we will pick it up in the next year when we then do the follow-up of the audit. Thank you, Chair. May we leave it there without wasting any time.
Thank you very much. We're going to deal with the presentation of the department, and then we'll engage with both presentations at the end. DG? Basic education? You may give us the performance plan. It's shifted to the left. DM, you may address us.
Yeah. Thank you. I thought you would allow the discussion on the Auditor General, then we present, but it's okay.
I was thinking that because of time, that we engage with both reports because they're talking to each other.
And they are very long, both of them. But yeah. I will request our officials to make sure that they talk to the report. Yes, we need, especially where we had challenges, I think that's where we need to focus the most. Where things went well, we don't have to waste much time. I hope DG hears me, but he's in another meeting. If DG is in another meeting, then I'll just quickly call Ms. Bonambi and the CFO. They'll both present one after the other. But who called Ms. Bonambi?
Ms. PM.
Oh, thank you. So please try to talk, especially on where we had challenges. Don't talk about everything. Where we did well, just indicate. Because I look at the time, we might not have time, enough time to discuss and question. Over to you, ma'am. I can see DG is in another meeting. I don't know, DG.
DM is not actually a crisis because both reports are talking to the same department. So
yes,
we started on the other side. So as you make presentation, some of the issues raised here will be answered in the process as we.
Yeah, because it's the same report in any way. Same
the same report, yeah.
Yes. DG, yeah. Over you. To you, Papa. Facilitate this, DG.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Deputy Minister, the Business Executive of AGSA, the Senior Manager. DM, in the interest of time, as you correctly pointed out, that we need to save time, I'm requesting Usis Nozipo to start the presentation, then Mr. Kuno will cover the financial part so that we save time. I'll rather speak when we respond to questions and comments of honorable members. Thank you, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, DG.
Nozipo?
Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, DM, DG, AGSA, BE and Senior Manager, and DBE as Senior Management. As already indicated, I'll be taking you through the annual report presentation. It has three parts, but part B, in terms, I'll focus more on program performance because and touch on the audits, but AGSA has already covered that part, and then Mr. Kuno will take us through part C. These are the five programs which DM already reflected on, and I'm also trying and save time. I'll focus on this summary in terms of the performance. And also AGSA has already indicated that in terms of the overall performance, the department achieved 90%. And this is the breakdown per program. Program one achieved 5 out of 6 targets, and 1 was partially achieved. Program two, 28 out of 31 targets, and program three, 10 out of 11, program 4, 14 out of 16, and program 5 achieved all the targets. The 7 indicators and targets were partially achieved. I think this slide won't reflect much on it. It talks to both quarter 4 and annual overall achievements. And
We can't see the slides.
Oh no. Okay. Sorry, let me try and say again. Apologies. I thought you can see them.
I thought it was my gadget that is a problem.
My profuse apologies.
There they are. Yeah, no, can see them now. Thanks. Okay.
Sorry, apologies for that.
Look.
I was just to talking to myself. Okay, let me maybe reiterate in terms of this one. Sorry. This 9%, which was already covered, and it compares the two financial years. So it shows that 2021-22 achievement was 81%, and 2022-23 the achievement is 90%. And it's also showing per program. Program 1, 5 out of 6 achieved. Program 2, 28 out of 31. Program 3, 10 out of 11. Program 4, 14 out of 16. And program 5, all targets were achieved. So this one, I said I won't focus on it because it covers overall achievements for quarter 4 and annual. And the pie charts are also comparing the two financial years, 2021-22 and 2022-23. This slide covers the overview in terms of service delivery, the legislative mandate, which reflects on the National Education Policy Act, the NEPA. What is the role of the minister, and also in terms of the relations between national and provincial authorities. So the
apologies once more. The slides are not moving.
Okay. Maybe I will need assistance. Maybe from one of my colleagues, because I'm not so sure.
Hi, Ms. Mbonambi. Maybe you can unshare, then we can try to project from my side. Thank you.
Thank
Ms. Mbonambi, can you leave the service delivery environment and just move to the achievement of the objectives and indicators so that it works out faster?
Okay,
thank you.
I'll do it. Hey, Mr. Mahada, you can go to slide 15. Which reflects on the highlights. This is a comparison, honorable members. I will just focus on 2022-23, just to compare the two financial years. The full-time candidates who wrote exams, we're referring to 2022, is 752,003 full-time and 168,031 part-time. And the overall pass rate, which the honorable members already know, is 80.1%, which was an improvement of 3.7% from the previous year, 2021. The next slide reflects on the workbooks. The comparison also in the two financial years, a slight decrease in terms of the number, which is 59 million for 2022. And also the next bullet is on Funza Lushaka placements, which is 68% and also a slight decrease from the previous year. Next slide talks to the young teachers entering the system, 30 years and below. It's the 2022 appointed 19,408 of those young educators. And in terms of the National School Nutrition Program, which is the school feeding, 185 schools were monitored. Then we move to the performance, which is Part B, program performance. And honorable members, I want to reflect on those indicators which are achieved and which are coded, color-coded in green. We will move straight to 1.1.4 indicator, which was partially achieved. Target 28, and the actual achievement is 20 reports. And this was due to the late submission of provincial education departments, and this affected the education infrastructure grant and the early childhood development that is in program one. I'll be guided also, DG, in terms of the bullets after the indicator tables, because we have the narrative part. I think I'll be guided in that regard so that I don't also take too long. Okay. I think I'm guided.
Thank you.
Okay. In program two, there are three indicators which are partially achieved, being 2.1.4, and this is an annual sector report on SEERS. Due to the report being approved after the 31st of March, which is the end of the financial year, so then it remained a draft because the approval was outside the reporting period. And the next one, also under program two, is 2.3.3 on webbooks, which is small margin in terms of that underachievement. But the reason for the deviations of that minus 0.27 actually is the fact that some of the schools were closed after the orders were already placed by the PED to the department, and therefore could not be counted, those schools, because no deliveries were made to them. And the last one in program two is 2.3.7 on a number of special schools with access to electronic devices. The target, plan target, is 70, but the actual achievement is 49. So the target was not achieved by 21 special schools. And also reason based on the funding that we rely on the partners, on the mobile network partners, and the department could not achieve that target. And program three, there's one indicator, which is indicator 3.1.5, which was also signed outside the reporting period, referring to the 31st of March, and therefore it could not be fully achieved. And in the next program, there are two indicators that were partially achieved, being 4.1.1, which is also was also missed by three, target 30, and the actual achievement is 27. It's due to the community protest for one school. And for other two schools, because of the contractors who defaulted, and the contract had to be cancelled. So that's the reason for those three schools. And then we move to 4.3.3, which is the second indicator under this program, which was not achieved. Target planned is 97%, and the actual achievement is 75%. One of the district directors was not assessed on time and therefore could not be counted during the reporting period. But it was rectified later on. He had to go for that competency assessment to rectify the situation. And this will be monitored also during the current financial year. And for program five, I did indicate that all the targets were achieved, six targets were achieved for the program. This is a summary of the school nutrition per province, and in terms of the quintile, in terms of the number of learners that were provided with the meals, and the number of schools. And the number of learners is 9.6 million. I did indicate that on the following slides, AGSA has already covered us. This also covered in terms of, it was a reflection of the 5 years in terms of the audit outcomes, but it has been, AGSA covered us from 2020 up to 2022. And also in the next slide, in terms of the audit on performance, AGSA reflected on this, and I won't go slide by slide up to slide 92, Mr. Mahada, and then after that, I will request CFO to take us through. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Mbonambi. Good morning to the honourable members of the Select Committee, Deputy Minister, the DG, and colleagues. The audit action plan is following on the audit that the AG has the presentation that the AG has made. We have put together an audit action plan, and we also show progress as we go along. We monitor that progress regularly. Next slide, please. I think that's still on the audit action plan. Let me, because I'm using two gadgets, so sorry about that. Let me see. Yeah, on material irregularities, it's also part of the presentation that the AG has made to show material irregularities that the AG picked up in the past few years. None of the material irregularities relate to the year under review. Actually, even the previous year, there's none, but we've made significant progress in following up these material irregularities, such that I think there's one that the AG may confirm has actually reached finality due to the work that we've done within the department and the consequence management that has happened. Let's move to the next slide. Yeah, let's go to the financial report. Yeah, next slide, please. Yeah, in the previous financial year, we spent 99% of our budget. This slide shows budget per program, so we did very well. Already in the previous years, I think there was a year, if I'm not mistaken, last year when we spent 99.75, when we underspent by 0.25 or a quarter of a percent. There's a slight difference, but it's still very good spending. Next slide. Yeah, this one is the same information, except that the economic classification still shows the spending, the total spending of 99.1%. Next slide, please. There was underspending on the school's infrastructure by blocks grant, and we did ask for a rollover of the unspent funds, which we have already to date. Next slide. I think this just gives the reasons for the underspending. The one is on the school blocks grant, which I've already indicated we have received the rollover, and then as well as the workbooks project where invoices, which are normally received in the last quarter, came a little bit late, such that they couldn't be paid in the last financial year. This slide just shows the different grants, and as expected, we transferred 100% of the grants for the year. Next slide. Chairperson, that's at the end of our presentation. We recommend that the Select Committee on Education and Technology discusses the performance of the department against the targets of the predetermined objectives in the APP for the financial year 2022-23 and the department's financial year expenditure, budget and expenditure. Thank you, Chair. Over which you did here.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. This is the presentation. I want to thank the officials that they summarize and speak to what is called challenges. Back to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DM, and thanks to the AG's team and your team. I remember that's the presentation from the AG's office and the presentation from the department on their performance. Yeah, all members, that's the report. I'll take. I see the hand, Honorable Christians, and then and then we'll follow. Others will follow. And there's Honorable Ndongeni also.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
But I must say that most of the questions that we that we're going to ask were actually asked by the AG, and some of the things were covered there even during the presentation of the department. They actually responded to some of the questions, but we will need details on some of the things, and even if it means getting the other detail later, it will still be okay for us. So, Honorable Christian, it's your turn.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question to the department is about the consequence management and the irregular expenditure. Now, the AGSA noted that the DBE needs to institute consequence management more swiftly against officials responsible for non-compliance. Now, my question is, how will the department recover losses caused by irregular expenditure and in turn deter others from contravening legislation? That's to the department. And then to the AGSA, can they please elaborate on the assistance or potential training that the DBE probably needs, the DBE and the PEDs and the districts, to successfully implement consequence management then? And then with regard to the financial health status, I think that was extremely concerning when it was reported to us that due to persistent weak financial management and budgeting, the financial health status of PEDs were deteriorating. So the AG reported that there was a deficit of 726.3 million rand because some departments overspent. And I think that was extremely concerning, one of the extremely concerning points, that some departments had overspent, which led to deficits. Now, my question to the DBE is, how has this occurred? What monitoring was done by the DBE with regards to provincial departments? And then what measures is the department going to take to rectify these financial issues? And what steps then will be taken to ensure the improvement of the financial health of the PEDs? And then another concerning point for me was the learner transport, where it was reported that service providers were not adequately evaluated. There was overloading. Drivers were not picking learners up on time, and that led to an impact on class attendance. So all of that was reported by the AGE. And my question is, to the department, what is the criteria then for the allocations of these service providers at PED level? Because it was reported by the AG that those were not clear. So what is the criteria that these service providers are then allocated learner transport if they are unable to provide the necessary learner transport to learners? And then another thing is the early childhood development. There the AG also reported infrastructure is not maintained in the Northwest. Facilities are not age appropriate in Mpumalanga. And there's overcrowding in Northwest as well, with some classes more than 40 to one teacher. the qualifications of teachers are not up to standard, and there's unsafe playgrounds and facilities. So my question then to the department is, what is being done where the AG has expressed concerns with ECD provisioning? And so what strategies are then in place to address the ECD challenges, and whether they have found any support mechanisms to assist with improving or implementing then a fast track for ECD to up their infrastructure facilities and to deal with the overcrowding issues, etc. And then lastly, Chairperson, is the infrastructure and project planning. So it was noted there that there was around about 15 million rand of fruitless and wasteful expenditure by the department. There were 271 cancelled projects. There were 242 projects that were delayed. And, you know, I just need to find out by the department, what was the cause of this? Why has there not been progress in completing certain projects? Why are there reports on substandard building quality? And what is being done with regard to the vandalism and the underutilization that has been reported by the AG? Thank you, Chairperson. I have other questions, but I will be sending them in for a written reply. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Honorable Christians. On the issue, transport, the scholar transport. There had been in our last meeting and in one of our meetings in the Northwest, there were issues raised related to contractors, that a person applies for scholar transport when that person does not even have a bus or a taxi, but because they put better prices, then they are given the contract. Then they must go to somebody who has got a bus or buses or taxis, and then try to make deals. What are we doing to ensure that who we appoint are people who have transport to provide, and that their cars, their vehicles are in good order? Because in most instances, there's breakdowns, and the day is lost. So as the bus breaks down, and the one that's supposed to relieve that one is operating in another district, then we're done. The kids are going to meet school for more than 2 days if the repairs of that transport will take more than 2 days to repair. What kind of mechanisms are we putting in place to ensure that we contract the right people who have the transport that is roadworthy? Honorable Ndongeni, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, members. Morning, DM. Morning, officials of the department, officials of the Select Committee.
Just wait a bit on this. There's a background that somebody's talking, or there's a radio or something in there.
Hey,
can we mute our gadget? Please, you may continue.
Okay, I'm trying. Can you please go to Arab? Yeah. Okay, Chair, I'm back.
Yeah, the floor is yours.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Chair, I just want to know about the... On flat 38, note that some schools were closed after orders were placed and removed from the delivery list. Can police department... Yes, I hear that the schools were closed, but it didn't say closed for permanent or closed where for what, or was closed for 3 months or 2 months. If they can, please assist me on that. But as the closed, that closed means the closed permanently. This is the first one, Chair. The second one, on slide 44 notes a Dulushin project. Young people from surrounding communities were recruited and trained as a coaches. 70 coaches in 24 center schools were serving over 7.4 learners. Can please share the report finding on the actual achievement and perceptions of attending learners on the quality of engagement with the coaches, and share the details concerning the provincial footprint of the 24 centers, along with the length of employment contract of the coaches. And then can please share if the training offered for the coaches are recognized as formal qualification, granted credits towards a higher education qualification. On slide 6, enhancement program and evaluation of school performance, volume 2, grade 1 to 9, and Gauteng reported under percentage school delivered 99.95%. Please clarify why there is not 100% for Gauteng, as reported from the remaining provinces. Please elaborate on what was done to assist and support the linked school and the learners. Thank you, Chairperson. I will come back for another bite.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Are there other questions from members? Can we get answers to the questions that are asked, that were asked now?
Thank you, Honorable. I'll just take one question that was posed towards the Auditor General of South Africa, and I think it came from Honorable Christians, and it was asking what type of training is the AG recommending? And maybe in summary, Chair, one would acknowledge that the prescripts of supply chain continuously change. They continuously get updated, and therefore there's always a benefit in making sure that we have this revolving training, in making sure that the officials of supply chain are on par with where the country is going, so far as supply chain requirements are concerned. But in the main, key to our recommendations on supply chain is deterrent. And the entities or the departments can deter the officials when the control mechanism is watertight. And that's why we advocate for the preventative control, so that as a department, we need not be in the hands of the officials. So the control mechanism had to be so tough that it makes it difficult for any official not to do their part, or any of the service provider to take advantage of. So part of it, we highlight the importance of the leadership tone, but importantly, we say on a monthly or at least on a regular basis, we ought to reconcile that which we have the need for and that which the finance division and supply chain has to procure. And therefore, we are able to check that the requirements are being met as and when we are continuing with the procurement processes. But importantly and lastly, it's really just to make sure that we build in our mechanisms the work of internal audits, because they may not necessarily go to all the projects. They may not even be able to look at all your procurement, but the few that they looked at, similar to the few that is looked at by the Auditor General, may we make sure that we take this recommendation and replicate them across the sector and replicate them across different directories within the departments, just to make sure that we stand a better chance of zero incurrence of either irregular expenditure, unauthorized, or fruitless and wasteful. But we'll leave it there for now, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a follow-up, even though before I forget this one. What mandate does the AG have in instances where department ignores management letters and there are no responses, matters recur? What action, legal action, does the AG have to ensure that whatever the AG's office recommends or once done, gets done? What if there is no improvement? What action legally can the AG's office take? That will be just a little addition to the question, more information.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe let me just summarize it as follows, right? The AGSA remain a Chapter 9 institution, which means that the work that the AGSA does is really following on what administration would have done. And that's why at the beginning, Chair, when I was sharing the ecosystem of the stakeholders and the emphasis that each and every person ought to do their part. The how government has structured itself, it had required the accounting officer as a lead for administration to ensure that everybody does their part, and obviously the executives oversight that. The AGSA will come in to provide a view. And to the extent that the department is not necessarily moving in the right direction, there's two things that needs to happen. One is that those that are charged with oversight, which would mean that the executive and the accounting officer had to implement consequence management. The AGSA, with the amendment that came in 2018, the part that we are attempting to support government on is where government lost money. So where you had a material loss, and we believe that you are still not necessarily doing what the PFMA is asking you to do. There we are able to issue the material irregularity. And that's why in some instances in the sector, we had to get ourselves to that point. But in the main chain, the sector or any government institution, it ought to move on the backdrop of the functionality of administration and on the consequence management processes of both the accounting officer and the executive. So that at least the Chapter 9 institution as the AGSA does not necessarily have to take over the responsibility of accounting officer because we do not have that particular mandate. So when we are not moving, we rely heavily even on the oversight structure, including yourself, including the portfolio committee, including SCOPA, to just make sure that each of the entities of government move in the right direction. Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, DG, the answer to the questions asked.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I was waiting for the Deputy Minister to say green light. I don't want to be seen as flouting the protocol. But nonetheless, given green light. You have given green light, Chair. Thank you to you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for the questions that you have posed. And let me start by saying, we fully agree with the findings of the AG. I also agree with the responses that the AG has provided. The AG reports on its findings to management first, which is an established tradition, and also report to the executive, the minister in this case, and then moves over to the oversight structures of parliament, will also report to the National Assembly and the NCOP on its findings. So if there's no movement, then the AG would have reported issues to management. It means management, if management fails to take action, the executive would have to intervene and make sure that management takes action. In other words, the minister would have to act against the accounting officer if management is not acting on the findings of the AG. And then oversight structures of parliament would then hold both management and the executive to account, as we do now, and ask us these questions that you have asked us, as to why are certain things not done. Just to add on what the AGSA business executive has responded to. Consequence management, we do carry out consequence management. In instances where consequence management was not carried out, would be instances where we delayed in finalizing investigations. In the response of the AG, in the latter part of the response of the AGSA, was that we would need to strengthen the internal audit. We've recently had the assessment of our internal audit line function. We've received the report
of the assessment of the internal audit line function. We need to strengthen our internal audit line function, but also both in terms of its capacity to do the work. It's not only doing the work now in the department only, because the work of the department transcends the department in its classical sense, because we now deliver projects in provinces, which should be delivered by provinces. And our internal audit has to stretch itself to go to that extent, to look at the control environment and make sure that the control environment is strengthened. In addition to that, the sector audits also call on us to respond to the findings of the AG in terms of the NSNP, in terms of learner transport, in terms of issues that relate to the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative, a host of issues that relate to the 10 departments, which means our internal audit will then have to go beyond a department called DBE and also go to the other 9, to the sphere of the 9 education departments, and audit some of the work that's happening there to strengthen internal control environment. And therefore, an audit, an internal audit of the size that we have is too small to be able to do that. So we need to strengthen the capacity of our internal audit. And I agree with the observation made by the AGSA there, including the recent report, which was presented to us by the quality assurance service provider, which did the assessment of the performance of our internal audit. So consequence management, we do implement, but we are impeded from doing that if the investigation has not been finalized. And where the AG has indicated that there was no consequence management, it would have been in instances where investigations were not finalized. And we accept that, but those outstanding investigations have since been covered, and action has even started on the investigation reports generated by our internal audit. Recovery of losses of irregular expenditure. There are very few instances where there are losses in irregular expenditure. The AG indicated that the majority of instances would be where people have not complied with legislation in terms of local content. Our implementing agents, instead of buying equipment locally, they buy equipment that is imported. So there wouldn't be losses in terms of money to the state. One can argue that there would be losses in terms of opportunities for local businesses of South Africa to have maybe generated revenue out of that. But losses to the state, as it is a classical loss where we are expected to recover money, there wouldn't be losses in many instances of that. There was an irregular expenditure. The AG reported that out of the 5 MIs, material irregularities, we've resolved. Out of the 4, we resolved 1. They've also reported that where there was money to be recovered, we were able to recover that money. And then poor financial management in PEDs, indeed, it came out of the findings of the AG. And Chair, we got the AG to present its findings to a committee of heads of education. And we've resolved there as a sector that each and every department will come up with an improvement plan to respond directly to these things, to address them. In addition to that, I've had a meeting with the senior management of the department to say where your line function is leading in all these issues, whether it's National School Nutrition Program, whether it's an issue of learner transport, or whether it's a host of issues that relate to different line functions. Each line function is going to come up with an improvement plan. In addition to that, all these findings will find expression in the performance agreements of managers, which we manage on a day-to-day basis, month-to-month basis, on a quarterly basis, on a semester basis, to inform the performance reviews of senior managers. Those are mechanisms that are in place to deal with the audit findings. We also have an audit improvement plan, and there are monthly meetings. Sometimes they happen more than a month, where the audit steering committee sits and look at progress. And all senior managers are part of the audit steering committee of the department to assess progress made in terms of the audit improvement plan. The same applies to issues of ECD. There is money, there is a grant for ECD to improve facilities of ECD. Mr. Mafuku can shed some light in that respect. So Mr. Mafuku is in the meeting, he'll be able to shed some light. The same applies to learner transport. With respect, we need to remember that some departments, I think about four, if not five departments, learner transport is still with the Department of Transport. So procurement and everything is done by the Department of Transport. The role that education does is just to indicate the number of learners, where these learners are. And then in terms of procurement, the Department of Transport would identify routes, issue out tenders, adjudicate over tenders, and education doesn't get involved. And it's for that reason that our argument has always been, this would be better managed if it's located within the sector, the basic education sector. But Mr. Mafuku can shed light on what the criteria would be to appoint a service provider. And your observation is spot on, Chair, including Honorable Christian. There are instances where Mueli would be appointed because I've tendered. I don't even have a bicycle, let alone a bus. And then once I get that tender, then I go to somebody who's got those facilities. I'm going to rent those facilities. So I'm going to provide the service based on rented facilities. As to how we deal with that, I'm sure Mr. Mafuku can also shed some light. It does appear that our procurement regimes don't prohibit people. For as long as you are able to meet the requirements eventually, whether you've got those at the time you tender, it doesn't seem to be material. But when the local inspection is done and it happens that you went out to rent them, then they'll be there. So those are probably part of the weaknesses in our procurement systems in government. So that's how I think things are at the moment. Infrastructure and project management. My own view, Chair, and I'm saying this with the greatest respect, the major issue around infrastructure, it's around monitoring. There are issues of capacity within the built industry of contractors themselves, including the consultants. Some of the companies are working with very inexperienced, very young people who do not have mentors to handhold them so that as they do this work, they do it as best as one would expect it to be done. But those are the challenges. But the main one, in my view, is that is monitoring. And why am I saying that? Ever since we strengthened our monitoring, the deputy minister is here on the platform. The deputy minister and the minister call us to a meeting. They've been doing it every week. They've decided to scale down and do it every second week. There's been an improvement in infrastructure. In the past, infrastructure, without any fail, it would be among those that would have not performed. Now, in terms of our APPs, there's not even one area where we have not delivered. 90% is 100% and above delivered. 10% we have partially delivered. And infrastructure, I mean, out of the, I think the 32 schools that we're supposed to deliver, we delivered 30, we could not deliver 2. And it's attributable to the monitoring that we've been doing. And if you ask me, nothing can beat monitoring everywhere. If there's delivery that's supposed to happen, if monitoring is up to speed, I can put my head on the block. Delivery will happen. Our major Achilles heel is monitoring. Ever since we upped our game on monitoring, that's why for the first time, we had 90% achievement of our targets and 10% partially achieved and zero of non-achievement. So if you ask me, it's about monitoring, to be quite honest. The issue of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, Honorable Christian, it's about schools that provinces would give us as schools where we are supposed to provide toilets, safe toilets in. And somewhere midstream our delivery, they then say to us, no, no, we are sorry. Those schools are no longer on the list. We are merging them. At that time, we have already spent money for planning and design, and therefore consultants have already been paid. The state has spent money on something that is no longer going to be used. And that's how it becomes fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I tried to recover this money for fruitless and wasteful expenditure from the money that we transferred to provinces of the grants. And National Treasury refused, because that's the only money that we have control over. And National Treasury refused, because it's not our fault. It's the fault if HODs have signed off the list of schools where toilets are to be delivered. And somewhere down the line, when we are hard at work with delivery, they say, we are sorry, we are withdrawing 2 or 3. The taxpayers' money has already been wasted. And unfortunately, comes from the vote of basic education, not of PEDs. That's where fruitless and wasteful expenditure is coming from. And it's for that reason that HODs from PEDs who are not improving in that area, we are no longer going to assist them. Because the fruitless and wasteful expenditure does not come from their vote. It comes from the vote of DBE. And Treasury doesn't allow us to recover that money from their votes. And then service providers who are appointed, even if they don't have transport facilities and so on, I've explained that. Honorable Ndongeni, schools which are closed, these are schools that are merged and closed. If they are merged and closed, it means they are permanently closed. That's why we're still sitting. When we were delivering, when we were planning to deliver workbooks, again, those schools were part of the list, signed off by the HODs. When we now have to go and deliver, we discover that schools no longer exist. Of course, schools in the commercial farming areas, some of them close overnight. Naturally, parents move to areas of economic activities, and it naturally closes a small school. So in that instance, that would be understandable. Reports on quality of engagement with coaches. I would request, I think it's Dr. Whittle, who might need to respond to that one, to provide details in terms of what you required, including slide number 6, where there is not 100% on Gauteng. So I'm going to request Dr. Whittle to help us with that one. So, Honorable Deputy Minister, if I could get Mr. Mafuoko, and then after that, maybe Dr. Whittle to help us with Honorable Ndongeni's questions. I hope we'd have covered all of them. Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members. Mr. Mafuoko.
Thank you, G, and good morning, still morning, to the honorable members and to colleagues. First of all, starting with the issue of learner transport, Honorable Deputy Minister, DG and colleagues, as DG has indicated, learner transport is managed in four provinces by the Department of Transport, which is in Mpumalanga Province, Northwest, KZN, and the Eastern Cape provinces. So as DG has indicated, procurement of service providers in those four provinces would be conducted by those respective departments. And as indicated, in most instances, you find that colleagues in the provincial departments of education are not even involved in the procurement process. Experience has taught us that in the provinces where the function is managed by the Department of Education, we find less queries and less issues that are coming up in terms of the roadworthiness of vehicles and so on. But also we are looking at issues like the collaboration between the departments of transport in terms of managing the road transport issues like your overcrowding and so on. Now, when it relates to the criteria for the allocation of service providers as it relates to learner transport, that first of all, we need to develop a service design for learner transport, which every department, we've got very clear guidelines in terms of the learner transport policy, in terms of what the service design should include. It should include your route description, your vehicle types, your timetables, trips, costs, length, and so on. But also, it goes on that the requirements should also include the required transport mode as per the specification. And these are clearly provided in the different legislation by the Department of Transport. The second thing is that the roadworthiness of the vehicle before a bid is allocated, there should be very clear evaluation of those vehicles that are going to be provided. So I've heard members talking about some people tendering to provide services when they do not even have transport, those particular buses that are required. That is not the case, because there should be even site visits to ensure that those buses are indeed available. And also, we also need to check in terms of the qualification of the driver that is provided. However, we find that in some instances, buses, for instance, there will be buses available when the bid is adjudicated, but afterwards, those buses are used somewhere else and we start having problems. For instance, we would say in this particular route, there is a need for two buses. And when we go to do the evaluation, there are indeed two buses and they are in a roadworthy condition. But afterwards, one bus would be taken to do something else and you'd find that only one bus is used and it is seriously overcrowded. But those issues are addressed through continuous monitoring. And most departments, most provincial departments have appointed monitoring firms that on a daily basis would crisscross the routes to ensure that the correct buses are used, the buses are not overcrowded, and the quality of the buses in terms of roadworthiness is taken care of. But also, when a bus arrives at school, there is a designated teacher that should check on the bus itself, whether it's not overloaded, then the learners that are supposed to be in the bus are the ones that are supposed to be transported in the bus, and all the other issues that are part of the specification of the bid. However, we are currently reviewing the learner transport policy. And this is to address some of the issues that we have picked up in the implementation of the current regime. And we are strengthening the parameters relating to the appointment of service providers, also as it relates to the requirements to be fulfilled in terms of appointment of service providers. So that those are the issues that we are currently addressing, and we hope that by as soon as we have finalized the process, the draft policy will be going out for public comments very soon. And as soon as public comments have been received, then we will be bringing it through the reporting structures for approval. Over and above that, as a regulation, we are developing a standard contract that will serve as a guide. We are developing that in collaboration with the Department of Transport. This standard guide will have all those clear parameters in terms of the appointment of service providers and all the other issues relating to a DG. As it regards to the ECD infrastructure, we have to acknowledge that last year was the first year when we implemented the function after it was transferred from the Department of Social Development to the DBE. Many provinces experienced some teething problems with regards to that, and Northwest, as it was mentioned, is one of the provinces that had serious challenges in terms of implementing the ECD maintenance program. However, towards the end of the financial year, after doing a thorough research in terms of what are the challenges, we implemented those challenges, and we are seeing quite a significant improvement in terms of the implementation of the ECD maintenance grant in all the provinces. We have also instituted a monitoring regime where on a monthly basis we go out to monitor what is happening in those provinces in terms of the ECD centers that they are being maintained in order for them to qualify for a subsidy. So, for instance, just to indicate to the members of the committee, as at the end of the second quarter this year, we have 400 projects that we are implementing in the current financial year, and as at the end of the second quarter, 201 of those projects have already been completed, which is just about 50% of the projects that we are supposed to implement in the current financial year. So this shows that we seem to have turned the corner in terms of the implementation of the ECD maintenance, and we expect that by the end of the financial year, all those projects would be completed. However, we have also instituted a regime that ensures that we plan well in advance. As we speak, we have a pipeline of projects for the entire MTEF where we know what is it that we will be doing in which particular ECD center for the next 3 years. Of course, we are aware that we've got quite a small allocation on the ECD allocation, and we have made a request to National Treasury to consider adding a little bit of funding to the ECD maintenance grant, because that is where we have identified that there is a lot that needs to be done in order to improve access for our young learners. Thank you, DJ.
Dr. Whittle, thank you.
My apologies, I was struggling to unmute here. The coaches matter is actually a rural education issue, Deej, so I hope that Ms. Gaya can help us respond to that. Ms. Gaya?
Thank you very much, and good morning to the honorable members. So the rural education has had this Edulution project that has been running for a few years. And in that project, they have undergone various training of young people in rural communities to give them various skills that they could use either to help them in finding work within rural communities or to help them into areas of possible study career pathing. So this particular training is helping the learners to do some, it's like a kind of teacher assistance that they used to have the name of teacher assistants previously. And then when the PYEI took over and they took on that name of teacher assistants, not to confuse the system on what we were referring to, they then took on this name of coaches. And they essentially are helping in the classroom, with the, helping the learners with homework, helping the teachers in terms of you know, some administrative work like photocopying and, you know, whatever admin tasks a teacher can assign to these young people. And a lot of these rural education, or this is not a formal qualification that they get, but what has happened in the process is that a lot of these coaches, as we call them now, have gone into getting the Funza Lushaka bursary, because it sparked an interest in becoming a teacher, and so they came from the selection within those districts in the rural areas to take up the Funza Lushaka bursary and also the NSFAS bursary. That's how they have been able to be accommodated in formal training. Thank you very much. I hope it answers the question.
Thank you, Ms. Jaya. DM, we will provide the required report in terms of the coaching to Honorable Ndongeni as requested. And that's our response, DM. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, DG. Thank you, Chair. I think they have covered all what I could say, except that when we started this meeting, I did not greet the office, the Auditor General. Cabo, I'm sorry, my sincere apologies, and the team from the Auditor General. I'm Makabo, your Cabo, Barre Limpopo, Hudula di Chuen, Kidizu. Barre Limpopo, Kidizu, Mapitivo, Makabo, all this, but my sincere apologies and greetings to you. Chair, I think these are the responses from the department. Thank you very much. Chair, was it, I'm still in the meeting. DG?
Yes, DM, you are.
Maybe I'm speaking
yeah, about it. The chair seems to be missing. Oh, I don't know what has happened.
He's in Limpopo. They say Limpopo is the zoo.
I have no comments, DM. I don't comment on things that involve senior people.
Bokhabo, bomakhabo, bomapitsi, bomachweni. That's Limpopo for you. And there's no network. When we are sharing a meeting from Limpopo, God is
no, I mean the Northwest, there is network.
I'm begging the meeting. I've heard you, DM. We'll report you in Mulej Mushade once you come there, we'll explain.
You know,
yes, other members. No, I got cut off. But I guess we have we still have some time that we have a new baby in the block, that is the ECD, Early Childhood Development. And I think our concern also will be, how do we go around this, given the, I mean, in our program next year, you know, and then trying to check the district development model, how is it assisting, how will it assist the ECD in meeting its needs, you know. Of course, the infrastructure also linked to ECDs, because, you know, most ECDs did not have accommodation where they were. I mean, it was, you know the crashes in the township. Just a pair of tires. If you have five tires and a little spot there, you've got a crash. Children play there. But how does this district, the development model, how will it assist us in developing infrastructure for ECDs? Thanks, Chair. Or are there other questions that members would like to, or follow-ups? Christians, you said you have more, but it was a question of time. You didn't want to ask questions alone. And then Dongene, Honorable Dongene said the same. So if you want to take a second bite, you may. But in the absence of that for now, can we get comments about the, unless if all the questions were answered, because I got cut out of the meeting. DM? The district development model, how does it help to meet our needs? Even the AG's office can answer this one, because they've talked about it in on slide 29, I guess, so when they were doing there.
Yeah, Chair, the district development model will help a big deal if we get it working, all of us united. Because currently, it looks like we're still not on the same boat, all of us. Remember, in terms of the constitution, the one that is responsible for ECD facilities is the local government. When we look at the model for South Africa, we are working with all departments, starting from COCTA, SALGA, municipalities, justice, health, social development. So that all of us, we work together from the beginning of the life, from zero for all the children. That we are working together. And if we take it the DDM model, wherein the municipality must know, unlike now, the way what we inherited from social development, if only I register my NPO or whatever, then I get 50 children, then I go social development, registers me. That's what we have inherited now, and that's what we're still managing. But we are working towards coming up with South African model of the early childhood development. That's what we're looking forward to, working with all relevant departments. And if we take it at that DDM level, it will be a good one, like you say it, Che. Unless the Auditor General would have something to say, but I think you are very correct. We need to do it in that, because it's municipalities who know their population, and they know the number of young ones and as to how many. And unlike now, if we say as education, want to service all of them, this one has 15 a garage, this one has 20, that one has 15, that one. And in one area, one village, there are 20 ECD centers, yet you have one primary school or two primary schools. It's not workable in that way. We need to structure it that it services the entire village. The new model will look at the redress, equity, access. As things stand, not all learners that are supposed to be in the ECDs are in the ECDs. So we are working to the inclusivity that every learner must have access to early childhood development. We're still going to come and present our proposal to the committee. Thank you.
Thanks, DM. AG, any comment?
Thank you. I just will deal with it
earlier,
from our side, and we'll deal with the detail once the model is really conceptualized properly, right? But key to note is that a model that takes government as a network, therefore coordination across local government and provincial and national, will always be best for the country, and that's what we always advocating for. But we do caution that, you remember that there are a large number of challenges that we highlighted at local government level, right, that still need to be unlocked and attended to, so that we do not magnify them once we start putting some of this mandate at that particular level, the data quality as well, and just the control mechanisms. But the coordination would always benefit government in any aspect of service delivery. Maybe we'll leave it there, Chair. Thank you.
Chair,
can I ask a question?
Yes, you're welcome.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I'm asking in the department on program trim, which is on the on slide 57, note that LAMAP project in partnership with the French embassy. The department implemented an inquiry-based science education project in 5 districts, in 5 provinces, and support for grades 8 and 9, mathematics and natural science. Given senior phase mathematics and science weaknesses, the department planned and implemented a grade 8 and 9 teachers capacity building program in 14 districts. If they can elaborate on the success and further rollout of LAMPA project and the grade 8 and 9 teachers capacity building program. That's the one. The second one, if they can share any link between the LAMA project and the grade 8 and 9 teachers capacity building, I depend upon in day one. And then on slide 59, placement of Funza Luchaka graduates at 68% at national level. If they can elaborate on how this statistic is communicated to the general public specifically within the context of attracting high-performing learners in STEM subjects such as mathematics to pursue teaching as a profession. Thanks, Chairperson.
The other worrying thing is, you know, with Funda Rishaga and the this program you're teaching at UNISA, is that even when there are people who did the courses, particularly with UNISA teaching, and some are doing mathematics, they're math teachers, they can't get placement. We've got mathematics teachers who, at primary level, and even some would be able to teach mathematics at secondary level education, but there are no posts for them. Is there a center where, or an instance where, if you know, if there are teachers who are looking for jobs, can check a particular website where there are posts for teachers? Presently, I don't think there is any, or if there is any place where you could search for teaching posts. Maybe I don't know about it. If there is such a thing, let us share the information. We worried about people who are encouraged to go register and become math teachers, but there are no posts. Thank you. Are there other questions that members would like to ask? Oh, and that's okay, and you, and then you'll be followed by Honorable Christians.
Okay, thank you. That's only if they can update on the progress of vetting all educators. If they can give us an update, if they have. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Christians, this will be the last round of questions.
Yes, thanks, Chair. I just have one question, and it's with regard to the school nutrition program. And there was just a report by the AGE there that there were some discrepancies with regard to unhealthy food products, lack of utensils, unclean environment place, and this all placed a risk on learners. And then also the misuse of these funds, which led to inferior food and smaller portions for learners. And some of the areas that the AG reported were the result of this was that there were non-functional committees and coordinators at some of the schools due to capacity constraints, and then also the reporting framework that was utilized for monitoring is not reflecting the core areas to ensure progressive implementation. So I just wanted to hear by the department, you know, we have heard in the past as well that there were problems with the school nutrition program. So what is the department doing in terms of this? You know, has there been any plans to rectify this? And if so, how far is the department in, you know, just getting this nutritional program back to where it's supposed to be? Can the department just share that with us, Chairperson?
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Honorable Christian. Over to you, DM, DG.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me start with the National School Nutrition Program. Coincidentally, we're reporting to the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education yesterday, focusing on Eastern Cape and KZN, because those are the two provinces that experienced challenges in the past. The Portfolio Committee yesterday received the report or reports both from DBE and the two provinces, indicating that the challenges which were experienced before have been addressed and they don't exist anymore. Now, to Honorable Christian, we don't want to bring National School Nutrition Program to what it should be. We want to take it to a higher level, to be better than what it should be now, or what it is now. And there is a project that Dr. Whittle is leading of the modernization of the National School Nutrition Program. Part of it is that we want to see learners also being covered with some breakfast of, you know, meals that are nutritious, that will be able to provide the proteins that are required. And Dr. Whittle can provide some details in that respect. But what I can assure the committee is that the two provinces that experienced problems early this year have addressed those problems. And we are looking forward to a better and modernized national school nutrition program. Regarding the issues that Honorable Ndongeni raised, they appear to be related to math. The other one was about math and so on. But I think many of them were related to issues that Ms. Geya could respond to of capacity building in math and science. The issue that was also raised, which you also raised, Chair, about the vacancies in terms of teaching posts. Vacancies are usually advertised in a provincial gazette. Other than that, the adverts are also done locally, either at district or even at school level. And they have mechanisms that they use to advertise these posts. But there is a database that we keep of people who are qualified in different areas, and provinces do tap into this database now and again when they are looking for teachers, particularly for scarce subjects such as math and science, the BCM subjects of accounting, business studies and economics, and many others. But as to a central point where you can see, you can have a window through the entire system of the available vacancies, I don't think that exists. But Mr. Faker
is the acting DDG in the branch responsible for teachers. He can also just share with the committee in terms of what I might have not covered, which would give information about vacancies that are out there. Maybe we must start with Dr. Whittle and then go to Mrs. Gaya, and then Mr. Faker could then provide information on the availability of vacancies in the system. But in terms of Funza Lushaka, the recruitment is usually based on the need out there. And the needs are not only identified at national or provincial level. How the recruitment is done now is done locally at district level, based on the needs that obtain there, and it goes up to provincial level and then get collated at national level. And that also Mr. Faker could shed light on as well. Dr. Whittle?
Thank you very much, DG, and good afternoon to the chair and the members of the committee, to the deputy minister as well. So just in terms of the modernization of the school nutrition program, what we are planning to do is to better utilize economies of scale, as we have a budget at the moment of 9.2 billion. In the next financial year, it will be above 10 billion. And, you know, both of the models that we're using currently on the program doesn't adequately give government value for money. And so that's something that we are busy introducing at the moment. And at some point, we would be happy to come back to the committee to give them an update on that one. Just as far as the issues that Honorable Christians are raising that were highlighted by the AEG, we've already had a meeting with all of our provinces to specifically address all of these. We've agreed on an action plan, and from the national department side, we are tracking those at the moment, and we are positive that these would be positively addressed during the course of this financial year. Thanks, DG.
Thank you, Dr. Whittle. Mrs. Gaya.
Thank you, DG. So in response to the question on the MAP, which is that French program, we have this program with the French embassy and with the French government that is assisting us in terms of effectively and identifying math and science teachers that are part of a training program. And this training program is to help them with skills in areas that we've identified as difficult areas to teach maths in, the pedagogy of maths. And the focus has been on particular grades that can help. So we focus on grade 8 and 9 to help them with the concepts that can then strengthen the teaching and learning of these subjects in grades 10, 11, and 12. The program is mainly with branch T, actually, in terms of their participation and the identification of who and which provinces have been identified. The way the provinces were part of this was as a result of them going on a visit to France to be part of that training program and to experience what is on offer in the training institutes in Le Map in France. And as a result of that, those are then the participating provinces. And the way in which this program goes is that every time, once we have completed the one lot of training, they move on to another group of provinces and take those provinces over to France and experience, from the institutes what the learning opportunities are, the teaching and training opportunities are, and also the materials development opportunities are. and then they come back and they participate in the training programs within the provinces that then have undergone training. With time, as we continue with this program, we will be able to cover all the 9 provinces. And if Branch Key through Mr. Faker or maybe even Mr. Padiachi, who was actively involved in this previously, they may want to add on the details of that. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Ms. Gaya. Mr. Faker, you are at liberty to ask Mrs. Maje or whoever to assist.
DG, I can come in. It's Rabotapi.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. So in relation to, I think the question was mainly about whether have we conducted any impact assessment on this program. And the response is that we have not yet conducted any impact assessment on the program. And also to indicate that as a department, we have developed tools for impact assessment. And because the issue of impact does not only relate to this program in particular, but it also relates to the other programs that we are running in the department. So we are in a process of actually institutionalizing the issue of impact assessment. We have been conducting other processes as a way of measuring whether does the work that we do make a difference. And we have used, for an example, the pre and post test. Although we didn't apply the pre and post test in particular in the LAMAP program. But we believe that the institutionalization of the tools that we are still in the process of finalizing, and we will also be piloting those tools so that they can be applied generically to any program that we want to conduct impact assessment on. So it's a deficiency that we have identified, and we do have a plan of dealing with it. But at this point in time, we haven't really measured the impact of this program in particular. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Ms. Maje, you can proceed if you want to.
Yeah, you may proceed.
Yeah.
If there's any addition.
Chair, there seems to be none. I hand back to the Deputy Minister and you. Thank you, Chair.
DM, we are at the end of our meeting. Would you like to just say some closing remarks, comments from the DM, from the ministry?
Thank you so much, Chair, for this meeting and those answers that you promised that you will provide in writing. We still promise we'll provide them in writing, and we're looking forward to coming again to the Select Committee, especially after the examination, to report on how did the exam go and the performance. But we promise that the learners will perform. If they are not, it will be beyond our control. But from what we have prepared, we are ready and they will surely perform. And yeah, it might be our last meeting in the quarter. We wish all members well, and we really appreciate, we always appreciate when we come to the Select Committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you, DM, and thanks to the department and for for responding as you always do when we invite you, and engage with issues, not just to comply, but actually dealing with issues where we are solving problems. And that thank you. The victory of Amabhokobhoko, like I said earlier, it's owed to you because that is where children start playing, choosing sports and playing sport and go. So thank you very much. And we are hoping for the best results again this year. Thank you, DM. You and your team are excused. Members will remain for some few minutes so we deal with other in-house matters. Thank you very much. Members will remain. Bye, danke.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Noltando. Chair. I think that the AGSA is excused as well, Chair, with your permission.
Oh, AG, thank you so much for the enlightening information. Thank you.
Thank you, sister.
Very helpful. Wow, forgot the AGs. The members. Yes, members. Let's look at the. I know I've. As we go, minutes.
Can you see the minutes on the screen, sir?
Yeah, there they are on the screen. It's minutes of Wednesday, the 25th October. Can you see the minutes? Yeah, page one of the minutes. Yeah, the pages, just scroll the pages so that then we check if there's... any comments or matters arising from the minutes. In the absence of any, is there any mover for adoption of this minutes?
I move for the adoption, Chair Itukosi.
Honorable Mkosi moves. Any second?
I second, Chair.
Who is seconding?
Who? We are going to have that with
the law. Oh, no, Judge seconds, yes. Is there another? Thank you. Is there another 12 minutes, Noltando?
No, Chair. This was the only set of minutes.
None. And this will be, this takes us to the end of business today. With the Bella, is there anything that we need to say about the Bella Bill? No, except that it will be, when it's referred, we'll get that information.
Sorry, Chair.
Yeah, what's the process? What's going to be the process?
Chair, the Bella Bill has been formally referred to the committee. We were hoping to meet as the support staff so that we can look at the processes and then come to you with proposals on how to...
Thank you. Yeah, Okay. All right, then we'll wait for, we'll be briefed in the next meeting of the committee. Is that comment in order? Noltando. That will discuss this matter of the Bella Bill in the next meeting. Its reference.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Yeah. Thank you very much, and this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Jefferson.
Recording stopped.